I'd like to call the Senate Committee on Health Care and Veterans Affairs to order. It's Thursday, January 29th. Welcome, everybody. I'm delighted to be here. And today we're going to be hearing Senate Bill 316. And I would like to, it's clinical trials bill. And with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 316. And Mr. Shook, do you want to give a summary of the bill? And
sure.
Then we'll ask Senator Devlin to please come up.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 316 requires health benefit plans to provide coverage of routine cost of care and qualified clinical trials subject to copay and other cost-sharing requirements, and limits liability of insurers for adverse effects of clinical trial. And we have Senator Devlin and a number of representatives from OHSU and others
in this list.
Okay. Characters.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity to testify on SB 316. Clinical trials provide potential pathways towards improved care, more effective medication, and ultimately cures for a variety of diseases. When a patient enrolls in a clinical trial, the cost of all tests, procedures, drugs, and other activities directly associated with the investigation are covered by the group sponsoring the trial. However, because some health plans define clinical trials as experimental or investigational, insurance coverage may or may not include some or all of the costs of the routine care a patient would normally receive, and I'll underline this, would normally receive whether or not they were enrolled in the trial. SB 316 would require health benefit plans to provide coverage of routine costs when a patient is participating in a qualifying clinical trial. There are currently 25 states requiring routine costs to be covered for patients enrolled in clinical trials. Medicare also covers the routine costs of qualified clinical trials. Delays and denials of coverage of routine costs impede treatment options and medical progress. Fewer than 5% of all adults diagnosed with cancer each year participate in clinical trials. For many cancer patients, clinical trials are often the last resort after exhausting all other approved means of treatment. Low participation in clinical trials slows down the war against cancer and other diseases. Oregon has some great institutions, including many of the parties behind me, from the Oregon Health Sciences University and U.S. Oncology, that are doing remarkable work on finding cures for diseases, but due to the barrier of some insurance companies not covering routine care with patients participating in clinical trials, these institutions are at a disadvantage to states that require insurance to cover routine care. Patients do not want to lose care just because they are participating in a clinical trial. SB 316 clears up any misunderstanding on what is and what is not covered by insurance companies when a patient wants to or is participating in a clinical trial. SB 316 does not require insurance companies to cover, I'll underline this again, does not require insurance companies to cover anything that it is not already required to pay for. Today we have the opportunity to move forward in the fight against cancer, heart disease, and other disease that might be cured due to clinical trials. I ask you to support SB 316. I would be happy to answer questions, but there are parties behind me with much more expertise in this area. I want to give particular recognition to Brenda Eichelberger, who brought this issue to me quite a long time ago, one of those issues that surfaces early in the interim and has done a remarkable amount of work on this issue. And I want to also say that if you want to give any credit to this bill inside this building, give 2% to me and the rest for the work inside this building to my staff, Anna Haley.
Thank you. If there's no comments, then thank you, Senator Devlin. We'd like to call, and I'm not sure what the ACT stands for, ACT Coalition, but that includes, I think we bring...
Association of Clinical Trials.
Association of Clinical Trials. So that's Brenda Eichelberger. and Dr. Brian Drucker and Cynthia Chilton, if you'd come forward.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Committee. It's a pleasure to be here and quite an honor. My name is Brenda Eichelberger. I am from Tualatin. I'm a constituent of Senator Devlin's. I am an instructor in business at Portland State University, but I'm representing the patient's interest of this bill. I am a leukemia patient currently being treated at OHSU. I'm also a fifth-generation Oregonian. My ancestors walked the Oregon Trail. I bring up that connection in my introduction because my great-great-grandfather served in the legislature here in the 1860s. That was quite an honor for him. The bad news is when he came back from serving in Salem, he had actually contracted smallpox, brought it back to the homestead. It was unfortunate there was an epidemic going at that time. My great-great-grandmother was convinced by a traveling farmhand by the name of Sam to cut a cow's udder with a shard of glass that had been scarred by cowpox, and then cut the arm of each of the family members, thereby saving the rest of the family. My great-grandfather passed with smallpox, as did the baby. But the reason that they were saved, and I'm here today, is because they were willing to take risks. They were willing to do maybe what might have been one of the first clinical trials in Oregon. I'm not quite sure of that. But it succeeded. My story today is similar to that. I have chronic lymphocytic leukemia. It's terminal, incurable. The overall survival rate is difficult to extend, but we have the opportunity for all kinds of hope with blood cancer and the type of research that we've done here in Oregon, the type of people we have with Craig Nichols, with Dr. Drucker. And what I'd like to do is tell my story about the challenges I had. It's Access to Clinical Trials Act, that we have barriers to clinical trials. And the barrier that I encountered enrolling in a clinical trial was that my insurance company told me verbally that I would be fine and my routine care costs would be covered. OHSU, my trial site, was continually told differently in writing. So there was a difference between what they would say to me and what they would put in writing. That ultimately made it so OHSU said I was ineligible for the trial I wanted to be in, which was a custom designer vaccine, if I didn't get insurance cooperation or sign personal payment agreement. For me, I had just gotten a cancer diagnosis. Emotionally, I hope you guys haven't had to go through what that's like to tell your family that you have cancer. It's a very, very difficult time. So emotionally and physically, I wasn't at my peak. And then financially, to have to sit down and have this discussion, although at the time I was feeling like, what the heck, what do I need my retirement account for at this point? It was a very challenging and I think unfair, unappreciated, and uncomfortable moment. I did sign for personal payment, and I did get into the competitive fill trial, but there was a delay to that that could have cost my participation. Now, I'm fortunate with that. I was in the clinical trial. One of my friends of a friend by the name of Judith was accepted into a clinical trial over at Providence, and what happened to her was not quite so good because she had aggressive lung cancer. She went ahead and was excited about the trial, was entered into the trial. Her insurance company took several days to decide. And during that couple weeks, 7 business days, short amount of time for an aggressive lung cancer, she couldn't start the clinical trial. She progressed with her symptoms, had bone pain that bounced her out, and so she could not be in the clinical trial. You know, who made that decision then? Was it Judith? No. Was it the doctor? No. It ultimately was the delay of the decision by the insurance company, who did later approve it, but she had already progressed. Now, Judith shared her story with us 2 years ago, and unfortunately she passed away last July. So we couldn't tell, you know, what would have been gained by a clinical trial. You know, maybe it would have helped her, maybe it would have not. But again, the decision was not made by Judith nor her doctor. It was made by the delay. So how can we reduce these delays, denials, decisions being made not quickly enough for something that is a life life-altering decision for someone to participate in a clinical trial.
I'm down there.
I would say, you know, smallpox, which I started out with. Smallpox, tuberculosis, polio. We have found the cure to all of these diseases, and we can cure chronic diseases as well. But we need to try new things. We need to take a few chances, and we need to support those people willing to help. Patients who participate in trials should not be financially held hostage by their insurance coverage with the threat of financial ruin. Doctors need to have sufficient numbers of patients in their trials, and they should be the ones best suited for those trials, not just those who can get their insurance companies to cooperate in a speedy manner. So we can reduce this coverage confusion, we can reduce waiting times, we can increase the efficiency, and we can support our patients and our doctors. We can do that by increasing access to clinical trials through guaranteed coverage of standard routine care, and we appreciate so much your support of Senate Bill 316. Now, Dr. Drucker has some things to add, and I'd...
Thank you, Brenda, so much. And it's really courageous for someone who is living with cancer to be so passionate about wanting to be down here, because I remember you, I think it was during the interim when you came and talked. So thank you.
I'm feeling much better. The treatment's gone well. Okay. 3 weeks out of chemo now.
Thank you. Good.
Chair Monis Anderson and committee members, thank you very much for allowing us to testify today. It's a real privilege for us to be here. I know that you have...
Please introduce yourself.
I'm Dr. Brian Drucker. I'm the director of the OHSU Knight Cancer Institute in Portland, Oregon. I know that you have many, many difficult decisions that will face you in this session, and I applaud all of your energy and efforts on the behalf of our state. But what we're hoping to present to you, we are presenting to you, is something we believe that will be cost neutral, that will not cost insurance companies anything, that will not cost the state anything. What you've heard about is a bill that would require coverage of routine, already covered care in clinical trials. Let me just give you a little bit of background about what a clinical trial is. If you take a drug like the one I've developed called Gleevec, we began here just over 10 years ago with what are called Phase 1 clinical trials, the first time that a drug was given to people. We began to identify the right dose of the drug, of the medication to give. When that was identified, we then began much larger what are called Phase 2 trials, which would determine how well this drug worked. When we saw the remarkable benefits that this drug had, we then went to what are called Phase 3 trials, where we compared the current standard of therapy to the new therapy to see if it was better, safer, and how well it worked as compared to what the current standard treatment was. That process can take anywhere from 2.5 to 3 years, which Gleevec took, which was record time, up to 5 to 7 years. But every single drug that is on the market, Lipitor for lowering cholesterol, all the high blood pressure medications we take, all the drugs for diabetes, all the cancer drugs go through this process. Many of these life-saving drugs, many of these life-prolonging drugs, every single one has to go through this process. I'll give you an example recently where we have tried to build upon the success of Gleevec. Gleevec now has taken a disease which had a 5-year life expectancy to a 95% 5-year survival rate. But it's a lifelong medication, a medication that can cost up to $24,000 to $30,000 per year. I didn't set the price of that drug. That was set by the drug companies. We launched a clinical trial to add a new treatment, a vaccine, immune therapy, to Gleevec to see if we could stop therapy. Unfortunately, that didn't work, but if it did work, that would save insurance carriers up to $30,000 per year. When we launched that clinical trial, we had to look at 10 patients to enroll one, and 9 out of 10 denials came from insurance companies or from our patients not even wanting to ask their insurance companies if they could participate. And the reason that we had so much trouble was that what we're doing with our patients. We'll be monitoring. We'd be checking their blood counts every 6 weeks. We'd be doing a bone marrow every 6 months to monitor their disease. We're already doing that. We would continue to do that. But the insurance carriers would say, if they're enrolled in a clinical trial, we won't even cover those routine costs. If you want to do a check their blood count, they have to pay for it. If you want to do a bone marrow to check the status of their disease, something we would have done anyway, they now have to pay for it. Our patients didn't want to enroll in this clinical trial that ultimately would save insurance carriers thousands of dollars a year because of lack of those routine coverages. So that's what we're asking for, is just allow, or just require that those routine coverages be required and allow us to proceed quickly with our clinical trials. The patients we enrolled in our clinical trials were Medicare patients. Medicare already requires that routine costs of clinical care be covered. If a Medicare patient came in, we had no concerns. We could just sit down and talk about the science, what the progress that we might be able to make in this clinical trial, as opposed to the discussions which would be, is your insurance company going to cover it? How many calls are we going to have to make? How many letters are we going to have to write? How much time are we going to have to expend on your behalf trying to get you into this clinical trial? So I'm going to take just two more minutes of your time and talk about what my goals are as the director now of the Knight Cancer Institute. I've lived and worked in Oregon now for 16 years. When I took the directorship of the Knight Cancer Institute just a year and a half ago, I decided to stay in Oregon because I felt there were many, many things that we could do to improve the health of the people that live and work in our state. And I set a goal of lowering the death rate from cancer in our state to the lowest in the country. And I've committed to doing that because I believe that we can do this here in Oregon because of many unique opportunities. But there are many things that we have to do to accomplish that. First of all, as I've set out a 10-point plan, one of those points is to recruit some of the top clinical researchers to our state. We've already begun to do that. You'll hear Dr. Alan Sandler coming to us from Vanderbilt University, one of the top lung cancer experts in the country. My goal is that I want no patient with cancer to have to leave our state because of lack of expertise. But in addition, what I want to do is I want to create an unprecedented network of clinical trials across our state. And I want to deliver that care where patients live and work. I don't want everyone to have to travel to Portland OHSU. I want us to have a network that involves all the oncologists around our state so that the clinical trials can be administered in Bend, in John Day, in Eugene, in Salem. And in 2 months, we'll be formally announcing a formal affiliation agreement between OHSU and Salem Hospital so we can open the clinical trials at the OHSU Knight Cancer Institute at Salem Hospital. And we want to do that around the state so that patients can have access to the latest treatments that are available, the best treatments, the newest treatment, groundbreaking treatments that will save lives. And we want to be able to do that throughout the state. And part of what we want to accomplish is having access to these new treatments. But I can tell you that as you look at the competition, as a drug company that might be developing a new drug looks at Oregon and says, how many patients are you going to be able to put on our your clinical trial? And why should I go to Oregon where you're going to have these insurance company barriers when I can go to Tennessee, to California, to one of the other 25 states that already have this Bill 316 type language enacted? Why would I come to Oregon when I can go to another state where I know that instead of them having to look at 10 patients to enroll one, I know they can enroll every single patient they look at? Those are the kinds of competitive advantages that we will lose if this bill doesn't pass. And that will impede our progress, not only to allow access to people that need life-saving treatments, but it will allow us to be on the cutting edge. So I ask you to support this bill. I, as you'll hear from Cynthia, this is a cost. We believe this is a cost-neutral bill in every single study we've looked at. We believe this will provide us a competitive advantage as we look to continue to bring life-saving treatments to patients that need them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Drucker, and thank you for your work. You're very well known. I've read about you several times, and I'm so proud to have you here in the state of Oregon.
Senator Morseth.
Doctor, I had two constituents. I still have one constituent who made the transition from chemo to a pill that apparently works where chemo, continued chemo, does not work. One of the women passed away because the insurance company would not, well, actually she was on the Oregon Health Plan and it was $2,000 a month and her rate of survival wasn't high enough, and so they dropped her from the coverage for two reasons, I guess. The pharmaceutical company did give her some pills. She passed away about 2 months later, but I was trying to find a clinical trial. Do you deal with the patients then that go from chemo to an alternative? Now, the other constituent was taking, it was Celgene, and that was something like $8,000 a month. That was huge. They were private pay, and they, I guess, are still paying that price, but it's pretty outrageous. What about clinical trials in that regard? Are there new drugs being developed?
Well, Chairman Sanders, Senator Morissette, there are hundreds and hundreds of clinical trials. I mean, we actually looked at the clinicaltrials.gov site, and there are 3,000 clinical trials in Oregon right now.
I guess I missed that then, because I was talking to the doctors there, and they said, oh, no, we don't know of any clinical trials that she would fit into.
Part of that, again, is having the expertise here in Oregon, having the national experts here. And one of the things that I do routinely is if somebody, a friend of yours, came to me and said, I've run out of treatment options, I'd send out notes to my colleagues around the country and say, what's available? But my point would be that if it's not available outside of Oregon, I want that to be brought here, because I want people here that live and work here to have access to the most up-to-date treatments that are available. And that's part of our goal. But having this kind of a bill available gives us that it levels our playing field with the rest of the country.
I appreciate that. I guess I didn't check far enough. Everything was happening so quickly, and but she did get a continuation of her medication, but she died.
But you're absolutely correct, and we see too many heartbreaking stories of people that run out of treatment options. And part of what we need to do is my wife, who's the writer for me, has written a line, you can't tell a patient to be patient. We run out of options too quickly. We need more research and more federal dollars for our research, but that's not an issue that we will address here. We're just trying to make sure that if we have clinical trials up and running, we can get our patients into them and have them get access to these clinical trials that might save their lives today.
Good. Thank you very much.
Dr. Bates.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. First, Doctor, as a fellow physician, just a family doctor down in Podunk, Medford, Oregon, I want to tell you it's a real honor to meet you.
Thank you, Senator.
I consider you having an opportunity to become a Nobel laureate someday, and if you do, I want to shake your hand afterwards. Okay. So thank you for coming before us. I really appreciate it. I just have one question real quickly and a comment. I'm not sure if Medicaid patients are already covered under this or not. I know Medicare is, but are Medicaid patients already part of clinical trials? Is that paid for?
I honestly don't know the answer. I will defer to others that may.
If not, I would like to amend this that they are included too, because that's a large part of our population.
Chairman Sanders, Senator Bates, I do know that the Oregon Health Plan has this coverage.
That's Medicaid. Then we're covered.
Then we're in good shape.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure that was covered. And the other issue here, I think that we shouldn't lose sight of, this is also, in a way, a stimulus package for Oregon. Opening this up to more clinical trials gives us an opportunity not only to bring in top researchers from across the country, but it does bring in federal dollars, and it brings in dollars for clinical trials and research at OHSU, which will benefit the entire state. So there is a significant, I think, opportunity here for us to improve ourselves financially in the state by doing this. And I just don't see any barrier to doing it. We're the 26th state, great, but let's get in the game here. We've got a great center at OHSU. We've had had some breakthroughs there that the entire world looks at, and we need to make this a playing field we can all get onto as quickly as possible. So unless there's something hidden in this bill that's a poison pill that I don't know about, I think we should move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments about the economic stimulus. We agree entirely with that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cynthia Chilton.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Cynthia Chilton. It's my pleasure to be part of this presentation to you today. I have a background in employee benefits. I've been a consultant for many years. I'm no longer doing that work, but when Brenda asked me to get involved in the coalition, I said sure. And immediately I started trying to understand what the issue that was facing the coalition might be, because I had not really encountered anything like this in my years of working with employers and employer-sponsored plans and the insurance companies associated with that. And after much consternation and questions of Brenda and others, I came to understand that there really is a problem here, and there's a tremendous opportunity with Senate Bill 316 to actually provide very necessary protections to preserve the coverage, the insurance coverage that employees and other patients already have. But they're frequently, inadvertently, I don't want to say denied, but deprived of their benefit coverage for routine care costs because of the deliberations, the unnecessary deliberations about whether or not someone will have their routine care costs covered once they enter a clinical trial. In particular, the language of insurance contracts that relates to an exclusion for experimental and investigational treatments is generally one of the most lengthy and most complex elements of any insurance contract. It's extremely hard for even an insurance professional to understand the differences between one company and another, and it's simply impossible for the average patient to be able to understand what the implications might be should they consider a clinical trial. In addition, if somebody should call customer service, the answer is, we don't cover clinical trials. Well, that's really not the point, but I'm not sure the average patient understands that they're not asking for coverage of the trial. They're just asking for continuation of the insurance benefit that they already have for their routine care costs. So there really is a need for clarity in that respect. In addition, as Dr. Drucker recommended or pointed out, there's a need for some sort of standard across insurance with regard to the fact that routine care costs will be covered. He alluded to the fact that if it's a Medicare patient, there's never a question. It should be that if the person's insured in Oregon, there shouldn't be a question. If they have coverage for a particular disease, their standard coverage, their standard care costs are covered, regardless of whether or not they're in a clinical trial. And in that respect, Senate Bill 316 is intended to be cost neutral to the insurance companies, because after all, they are already promising to care for these patients and cover their routine care costs, and there is no expectation that they would be asked to pay for anything additional, including any related complications that result from the trial. That is, that liability is waived for the insurer in this respect.
I think that's Brenda's cell phone.
That's relatively unique.
It's nice.
What a lucky
nice.
That's okay.
Somebody was happy.
Very cheery. We, as we developed the legislative language, we sent it out to the insurance industry and had responses from three or four of the local insurance providers, and have stressed to them since the beginning of the discussion that the intent is that this be revenue neutral. This is not a something where a patient is necessarily going to gain anything from their insurance company being in a trial, but they shouldn't lose anything if they opt into a trial.
we will continue to work with the insurance company to get to the point where they understand and agree with the language that is crafted in the bill. And again, it's really a pleasure to have your attention today to this very important matter for all of us in Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate that, and as I'm sure enlightened me, as probably the rest of the committee, on this important endeavor. All right. With that, Sarah Varner and Dr. Jeff Sharman.
Good morning, Chair Monofanison and the members of the committee. My name is Sarah Varner. I am the Executive Director of the Oregon and Southwest Washington Chapter of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and I live in Hillsboro, Oregon. And I am delighted to be here today to speak in support of the Senate Bill 316 requiring insurance companies to cover the cost of routine care for patients enrolled in clinical trials. As the world's largest organization dedicated to finding a cure for blood cancers, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society recognizes how important this really is. Currently, only 3 to 5% of adults who are eligible for clinical trials participate in them. And one of the major reasons that they choose not to participate is because of the concern about health insurance coverage continuing during the trial period. But we know at LLS that without patient participation in clinical trials, we'll never find a cure. Without this legislation, patients in Oregon are at a disadvantage in being able to access potentially life-saving treatments. As you heard before, 24 states and the District of Columbia currently have some level of legislation requiring insurance companies to provide routine care for patients. The first state to enact this legislation was Maryland in 1998, so a little over 10 years, followed by Virginia, North Carolina, and Vermont, among others. Most recently, Ohio and Wyoming have added this legislation, and there's a list of all the states that currently have clinical trial legislation attached to my written testimony. Today, there are 11 other states considering legislation similar to this, including Alaska, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, and Texas. So Oregon has the opportunity to be the 25th state plus the District of Columbia, or the 36th state plus the District of Columbia, depending on timing. But we're hoping that we will see significant progress in all of the states so that, as an organization, we have the opportunity to increase the patients who are participating across the country. I want to tell you a story I heard just last week that really, to me, typifies why this is important. Because while we've talked a lot about life-saving treatments, there's also just improvements in treatment that are really important as well. There's a young 11-year-old girl from Southern Oregon who's being treated up at OHSU for acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or ALL. ALL is the number one disease killer of children. And while the life expectancy for children with ALL has improved dramatically over the last 20 years as a result of the continued participation of children in clinical trials, the treatment itself is extremely painful and just a horrible experience for the child to live through. So one of the things that we're looking at through clinical trials is improving the treatment itself. So one of the medicines that this young girl would typically receive as part of her standard treatment is a medicine that would be injected into the muscle. And in other parts of the world, including Germany, it is administered through an IV. So you don't have the injection. It's the same medicine, just a different administration. This is the way it's been administered in the U.S. historically, so that's the way they do it. They are going through a clinical trial right now to administer it through the IV, as they do in Germany. Same medicine, and they're just trying to prove the efficacy. Because it's a clinical trial, the pharmaceutical company would pay for the medicine, which is about a $38,000 expense. But the insurance company denied it. They said they would stop providing this young girl's health care coverage if she participated in the clinical trial. So her doctor took the time to appeal the decision to try to explain this. So she's spending time away from patients so she can negotiate with the insurance company. But time ran out. If they didn't start the medicine within 4 days, the clinical trial was no longer an option, and the girl needed to get the medicine as quickly as possible. So eventually the insurance company came back with another denial, but at that point it was already too late and they had started the standard treatment. She will get the medicine and she will get the best possible care, but it's more pain to the child and more cost to the insurance company. And ultimately, things like that just don't make sense. Ultimately, we're trying to find cures, and we're trying to make sure that patients have a good quality of life. For the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, this is all about blood cancers. It's leukemia, lymphoma, myeloma, and a wide variety of other kinds of blood diseases. But we're really proud to be part of a coalition that is looking at all different aspects of healthcare. Here in Oregon, it includes the hospitals like OHSU and others, leading oncologists in our community, and our organizations including the American Diabetes Association, the American Heart Association, the Arthritis Foundation, the Alliance Armstrong Foundation, the Multiple Sclerosis Society, and the Oregon Medical Association. They're all part of this Access to Clinical Trials Coalition, among others, and that list is also attached to my written testimony. All of us recognize that we will not find cures for the diseases that we're trying to battle. We will not find, in my case, a cure for cancer without the participation of patients in clinical trials, and removing this barrier is a key aspect to that. This bill is a huge step forward in fixing the problem and opening doors for patients seeking to enter approved clinical trials for all types of diseases. We're merely asking that insurance companies operating in the state of Oregon be required to do what they've contractually agreed to do and continue the cost of routine care. The people of Oregon deserve better access to emerging treatments and care delivered through reputable clinical trials, and SB 316 can help facilitate this result. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I look forward to working with you on the coming months.
Thank you. Dr. Sharman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Sharman. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. I recently completed my medical training at Harvard and Stanford Universities and moved to Eugene, Oregon, where I joined the Willamette Valley Cancer Institute and Research Center as a medical oncologist. Our group takes care of about 3,000 new patients per year, almost 15% of the cancer patients in the state of Oregon. I serve on the U.S. Oncology Hematologic Malignancies Research Committee, and I'm proud to represent the oncologists of my group and the patients throughout the state. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today in support of Senate Bill 316, which allows for adequate coverage of reasonable medical expenses incurred while the patient is on an active clinical study. The bill is a very positive step in the right direction for the state of Oregon and will ensure cancer patients, as well as patients with other conditions, are able to participate in promising clinical trials. This access offers a distinct benefit to all patients, present and future. As you know, cancer is an overwhelmingly common condition today. In Oregon alone, the American Cancer Society estimates that nearly 20,000 patients will be newly diagnosed with cancer this year. Cancer is now the leading cause of death under the age of 85, and these numbers will increase as our population ages. Estimates indicate that 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. You may be less aware of the virtual explosion of therapies being developed for the treatment of cancer. Over the last 20 to 30 years, our knowledge of cancer has evolved to a point where we can develop treatments that now target the cancer more effectively with less impact on the patient. Stated simply, some of these results are breathtaking. On a daily basis, I'm using drugs that were simply not available 5 to 10 years ago, and I'm using these on a daily basis to improve the length of time patients survive and the quality of the life for those patients on the medications. While I was at Stanford University, I had the opportunity to participate in the development of a drug for the treatment of lymphoma. Interestingly, this drug was formerly being developed for the treatment of nasal allergies, but based on my hypothesis and the laboratory research I did, as well as work from one of my former colleagues in Boston, we were able to come to the hypothesis that it should work in humans. We performed a clinical study that was recently presented at the American Society of Hematology as a plenary session where it was recognized as one of the most important breakthroughs in the treatment of cancer this year. One memorable patient I had received virtually every type of chemotherapy imaginable for his lymphoma, but was still left with a large lymph node on the side of his face, as well as other lymph nodes throughout his body. He received his first pill at Stanford University and then drove 4 hours to get home. Upon returning home, he immediately called me and said my lymph node's shrinking. When I saw him in clinic 1 week later, the lymph node was gone. He's remained on this drug now for almost 2 years and continues to feel great. We are at a remarkable moment in the history of cancer. There are so many evolving therapeutic strategies that it's fair to say that there are almost more interesting drugs to study than patients to study them on. The consequence is that this research is quickly moving from, these fantastic universities we have, OHSU, and engaging community providers as well. Today, there are millions of cancer survivors living productive lives. Many of these advancements are attributable to clinical trials. And over 80% of cancer care occurs in the community at outpatient settings like the Willamette Valley Cancer Institute and Research Center. Patients no longer have to leave their community for cancer care or promising clinical trials, but instead have access to the best of care close to home. I'm honored to be part of an organization that provides these life-extending treatments in an outpatient environment that is both convenient and effective, while offering a wide array of clinical trials to these patients close to home. Our patients are suffering with life-threatening diseases, and we aim to make their treatment as convenient as possible, with as many treatment options as possible. Without this legislation, many patients would be shut out and have little access to clinical trials that could provide the next breakthrough in treatment. Senate Bill 316 would address a system where payer payment policies significantly affect our ability to enroll patients in clinical trials. Senator Morissette, in response to your question earlier, I'm proud to say that at my last check, our institution is offering 4 to 5 clinical trials in lung cancer alone. I applaud this committee for tackling an issue that addresses payment policies that impede clinical trial enrollment, prevent randomization and blinding, and create selection bias in favor of patients with better insurance coverage. Senate Bill 316 would lead to improved care with more effective and efficient results for a variety of diseases, especially cancer. There is a reason many other states have adopted or are considering similar legislation, and I believe that access to clinical trials will benefit all patients. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? All righty. That takes care of the Access to Clinical Trials Coalition people, and now we're going to hear from some of the insurers. If I can have Mike Becker and Dr. Rich Rainey come forward.
Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Mike Becker with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I'm here today with Dr. Richard Rainey, our Regents Medical Director responsible for medical policy. Regents has had for over 9 years a medical policy specifically on clinical trials, our research urgent policy. We think we've been doing this right for over 9 years. And we're here today to talk to you about the covered services that we provide, the medically necessary covered services that we provide for our members enrolled in clinical trials, and we intend to continue to do so. We have identified some areas of concern in the bill, some language that needs to be fixed to be more consistent with how this should be carried out in Oregon and how we've been doing this. We think that we can come to agreement with the sponsor and the folks at OHSU in regard to those areas. The bill, as we've heard, is based largely on Medicare criteria, and there are some of those things in Medicare law that really aren't applicable to commercial populations. But again, we think we can work with the sponsors and OHSU come to agreement on this very quickly. I'd like to turn the microphone over to Dr. Richard Rainey to talk about some of those areas very briefly. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee, appreciate the opportunity to come and speak. We do have 5 areas.
And for the record, you need to introduce yourself,
I'm Dr. Richard Rainey, Medical Director for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. There are 5 areas of concern that we have. We feel that the language of the bill needs to be clarified with respect to the routine costs that are covered. We have some recommendations regarding the criteria to identify qualifying clinical trials. We feel that the requirement to consider non-participating services at the same or similarly to participating services is not appropriate, and we feel that...
Cite the specific sections that you're dealing with, or do you have that information?
Yes. And then I'm going to go through each of these five in detail, and so I'll cite it at that point.
Fine.
If I may.
Great.
Okay. And then there's currently an exemption from the standard sunset provisions, and we do not feel that that's appropriate. But of most concern is the requirement that covering the costs of trials of patented medications and devices, we feel that to be the responsibility of the manufacturers. And we feel that this is a mandate that requires us to doubly fund that research and development cost, and I'll explain that in more detail. We do feel that this double funding is not revenue neutral. We feel that that would increase costs. So first I'll address the issue of coverage of routine costs. The bill as it is drafted now actually only addresses routine costs within qualifying clinical trials. We agree that the definition of routine costs is an important issue, and we actually recommend that the bill address routine costs for all investigational services, not just for qualifying clinical trials. The bill only focuses on routine costs and qualifying clinical trials.
I'm not sure I understand that point.
The wording of the bill addresses routine costs, but it only addresses it within the context of a qualifying clinical trial. So if there's an investigational service that does not meet the qualifying clinical trial criteria as set forth in the bill, then routine costs is not addressed by this bill.
So there are non-qualified clinical trials that are going on?
The bill defines qualifying clinical trials as meeting three or four criteria as defined in the bill, and so if it doesn't meet those criteria that are in the bill, then it would be a non-qualifying trial. And so the bill would not address routine costs there, and we feel that the bill should address that.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Bates.
Are you talking about broadening the bill, basically, here?
We're talking about broadening that aspect of the bill.
There is one... Let me ask a question, if I could,
Madam
Chair.
Yes, please.
There's one type of clinical trial that I do have a little problem with, and it's one commonly carried out in communities. It's primary for medications that have gone through and are either going to be or very quickly going to be approved by the FDA. And I sometimes see them more as promotional about the pharmaceutical industry and then really, truly a clinical trial. Those are usually completely covered by the pharmaceutical industry as far as all costs are concerned with that. I'm assuming we need to cut that out of this somehow.
Madam Chair, we agree with that, and that's part of the criteria that we're proposing. That would what you're describing, I think, would probably be a phase four trial, and our criteria are specifically specify phase two and phase three trials as opposed to phase four trials.
Okay.
We do recommend broadening the definition of routine cost with respect to all investigational services. We agree with the spirit of the first criterion, which is based on the first criterion of Medicare coverage. We actually would recommend that it be tweaked to be a little bit closer to the Medicare definition of investigational services. We feel that this broadening, in combination with the existing contractual language requiring medically necessary services, is what would provide continued coverage of routine costs. And routine costs are costs that are necessary, medically necessary, absent a trial. We feel that the broadening the bill in that way would address some of the concerns that have been brought before the committee today. The current language goes further and defines other costs as being routine costs. It says that provision of an investigational drug, device, or service is routine. Monitoring of an investigational drug, device, or service is routine. Treating complications of an investigational drug, device, or service are routine. But logically, these are not routine costs. These are the costs of the qualifying trial. So that's the bill and focusing on covering cost of qualifying trials has included these other costs that are not routine medical costs. We agree with covering it when it's not a patented drug or device, but we object to covering it when it's a patented drug or device. So we do recommend amending the bill so that it addresses this important issue of whether coverage of routine costs for any investigational trial or any investigational service.
I had a question about that.
Yeah, okay.
No.
All right. Okay.
No.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Our second concern regards the criteria that are used to identify qualifying clinical trials. The criteria that are used in the bill are a subset of the existing Medicare criteria, which come out of a Medicare national coverage determination. It is not the entire, it does not encompass all of the Medicare criteria. We feel that these Medicare criteria are less applicable to the commercial population. It includes coverage of any government-funded trial, including Department of Defense trials and Veterans Administration trials. We don't feel that those are appropriate for for commercial populations. In addition, there's a lot of emphasis on covering drug trials. Medicare has a slightly different issue because Medicare actually wants to facilitate their members to be enrolled in clinical trials because drug companies typically don't are more reluctant to enroll Medicare enrollees because they like to have a younger, healthier population as opposed to an older, sicker population that tends to be Medicare enrollees. So that's part of the reason why that provision is in the Medicare criteria. We recommend substitute criteria to identify qualifying clinical trials that are a hybrid of our existing Regents criteria and the other Medicare criteria that are elsewhere in that Medicare national coverage determination. Briefly, those are that the service be therapeutic, that the service be for a treatment of a life-threatening or disabling condition. Certainly all of the examples that have been brought forward today are life-threatening and disabling conditions. Phase 2 or Phase 3 trials, referencing not covering Phase 4 trials, as we mentioned before, a written protocol with institutional review board approval, well supported by scientific evidence, not duplicative of other published studies, and appropriately designed and conducted according to appropriate standards of scientific integrity. So we recommend substituting this hybrid of our tried and true criteria along with the other aspects of the Medicare national coverage determination that have been omitted from the current bill. Our next two concerns are briefer. There is a provision in the current bill.
Chair.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
So your hybrid, I mean, you had mentioned that you wanted it expanded beyond just drugs to services and devices as well.
Currently, the provisions of the criteria in the bill to identify qualifying trials they're in a section 3 A through C, and so we suggest. So those criteria are funded by a long list of federal agencies, conducted as an investigational new drug application, or exempt from federal law for the requirement to submit an investigational new drug application. What we're recommending is substituting the list of criteria that we mentioned before that combines our existing tried and true criteria for identifying qualifying trials along with other criteria from the Medicare national coverage determination.
Okay, and Madam Chair, actually he's making reference to lines 27 to 31 on page 1 and lines 1 through 3 on page 2, so of the printed bill, I believe, not section 3, so.
Okay. Okay.
Our next concern regards on page 2, at the top of page 2, the section number 4, lines 4 through 7. Mm-hmm. That requires regents, or requires payers, to pay providers who are non-participating at participating provider rates. This subsection mandates special preferential coverage of non-participating services that are investigational, and we feel that this is an unfair mandate with respect to members who require other non-participating services that are medically necessary but don't happen to be investigational. So this is creating a differential in terms of how members are treated. We feel that this could, by participating, that refers to providers who are contracted with the payer. The risk to members to having services from non-participating providers is that non-participating providers are allowed to balance bill members for their for services, whereas if it's a covered service, generally participating providers are limited to covering, not to balance billing the member, only to charging the member for co-pays, co-insurances. We feel that this could have the unintended consequence of encouraging investigators to not contract, so that they would have, because of that incentive, to balance bill members. Fortunately, we don't feel that this is a big issue in Oregon, because the majority of research is conducted by academic medical center or other participating providers. So this is not come up frequently with us. This is not a part of a Medicare national coverage determination. We recommend striking this provision. The other provision that we object to is on page 2, line 13, section 7, exempting the bill from the usual sunset provisions. In our own policy, we found that revisions have been necessary based on experience that we've received from requests. This is very new legislation that we feel should be subject to the standard sunset provisions, so that there's an opportunity to review the experience of the bill. We recommend deleting that exemption. Our strongest concern and final concern is the mandate to cover the costs of clinical trials of patented medications and devices. As I mentioned, the bill as written requires that the payer cover the costs of provision of providing the medication, of monitoring the medication or device, and the prevention, diagnosis, or treatment of complications. By the way, that does conflict with the page 2, section 6, lines 11 and 12. So there's an internal contradiction in the bill, where on the first page you're requiring coverage of contradictions, and then on the second page you're saying that is not liable for any adverse effects of the clinical trial. So that's an internal contradiction in the bill. The Regents agrees with coverage of qualified trials for services. In our existing policy, we have covered services under our existing policy. One of the most frequent services that we have covered have been the service of bone marrow transplants, as the indications of bone marrow transplants have broadened, and as there have been variations in how bone marrow transplants are administered. So these have been among the most common services that we have approved under our policy that's been in place for 9 years. However, we object to the mandate broadening from covering services to also covering patented medications and devices. We feel that those costs should be the cost of the manufacturer. Patents are exemptions from the usual free market safeguards that grant the manufacturers monopolies for limited periods of time. Manufacturers charge monopolistic prices, and they advertise heavily, and that advertising is one-sided. You see the advertising for the name brand medications. The generics are not being advertised at the same time. In addition, manufacturers have regularly used the system to bring out medications that are only a minor variant, just to stretch out the patent. Regents would prefer not to pay the monopolistic prices that are charged, but we accept that is part of the way that the system is developed. That's part of why there's the patent protection, to allow that, to allow manufacturers to recoup their research and delivery and research and development costs. We reimburse those very high costs for medications to be developed. The number that Dr. Drucker gave earlier for the cost of Gleevec, we actually, our most recent evidence is a little bit higher than what Dr. Drucker quoted. Our currently, for Gleevec, the average price that we paid over the last 8 weeks per prescription, which on average tends to be for about a month, but per prescription is $3,400. $3,400 per prescription. That's not for member, that's per prescription. We're paying that, and we realize that that's to recoup the research and development costs. So we object to a mandate that requires us to use premium dollars to pay the manufacturers both up front and on the back end. We feel that that's double payment and unfair to our members and an unfair use of our members' premiums. We wouldn't object to this if the manufacturers didn't charge monopolistic prices, but the patent system allows them to do that. However, we would support amendments to the bill to clarify that the qualifying clinical trials are not for patented medications and not for patented devices, but for services that where there's not that ability to recoup the research and development costs. So in summary, there are five issues that we have with the bill that we would like to see addressed: clarification of the routine cost issue, clarification of the criteria regarding coverage of qualifying trials, the requirement to consider non-participating providers as participating, the exemption from the sunset provisions, and then of most concern to us is the requirement to double pay for the research and development for patented drugs and medications.
Thank you. I think that your concerns are valid, but I think it's extremely important for you to be able to meet with the proponents of the bill, and I'm not sure exactly who you would be working with. To address those issues, to see if you can come to consensus, and if you can come to consensus, I'd really appreciate you can get mother's note from Mr. Shook here to have those amendments addressed. For those areas that you cannot come to consensus, then you would just draft your own amendments, and we would have to make those decisions.
Madam Chair, we'd welcome the opportunity.
Yes, Senator Bates.
Madam Chair, this is something as a physician I'm deeply involved with and incredibly interested in. And with your permission, could I convene a work group between these two people next week and see if we can hammer this out and bring it back to you, if that would be acceptable to all parties?
Excellent.
Mike's good to see you again, by the way. And it would be an evening meeting. I'm sorry. My staff will set up very quickly, and any members of the committee like to help me, I'd appreciate that. We'll try to hammer this out very quickly and get it back to you.
Great. All right, yeah. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd be interested in that, Senator Bates, as well, and the stuff I had highlighted in the bill that I had questions about, I think, have been addressed here. We need to make sure that this is doing what it's intended to do. I fully support what it's intended to do. I just think there's some language issues that need to be dealt with.
All right. Thank you very, very much. All right. With that, Mike Dewey and Dave Fiskum.
You have a patent on your smoothie jam that I had some dates
for. No, we should have some. I don't know where we got that. I think it was 1990.
We'll go check with my staff.
Sure. I don't.
Is that okay?
First day of sessions.
Then that's the one.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Committee members, I'm not Mike Dewey. I'm
my colleagues in the back is running down the hall to try to track down Mike so he can join me at this witness table. For the record, my name is Dave Fiska. I'm here this morning representing Providence Health System in Oregon, and as many of you know, Providence is a system that operates 7 hospitals around the state in Portland, Newburgh, Milwaukee, Hood River, Medford, and Seaside, as well as Providence Child Center for the Medically Fragile and Providence Elder Place and other special programs. And in addition, we operate a health insurance plan, Providence Health Plan, which covers thousands of lives in Oregon. I've been instructed by Providence to appear here today to provide to you, and for the record, 2 letters dealing with Senate Bill 316, one from Dr. Kevin Keck, Medical Director of the Health Plan, and another from Dr. Walter Erba, Director of the Providence Cancer Center, and I see that you have those before you. Frankly, both of these physicians had hoped to be able to be here today to discuss Senate Bill 316 with you in person, but their schedules, for several reasons, including practice, medical practice, did not allow them to travel here today. So the backup was for me to share copies of their letters with you and to take the risk of being a lobbyist getting over his head on medicine. So with your indulgence, I will forge ahead just briefly. Within Providence, we've had a series of spirited debates about Senate Bill 316 because, as you know, within one organization, we operate a delivery system and a cancer center which supports coverage of clinical trials, and a health plan which organizes care for insured Oregonians and as well supports coverage of clinical trials. Our letters reflect that, as long as there are appropriate limitations and definitions. That's prompted us to resolve debates on Senate Bill 316 internally before coming here to this witness table, and to do so, in fact, with an eye to health care costs, which is a concern for all of us. Let me cite just a couple of paragraphs of the letters I have submitted to outline this internal agreement, because I know you're just now reading them. On page 2 of the letter submitted by Dr. Erba, in the first paragraph, he writes this. Important to say for the record, given the very difficult economic times, we are supporting Providence Health Plan's recommendation that Senate Bill 316 reflect the same scope as current Medicare coverage for trials. And then on page 1 of the other letter from Dr. Keck from the health plan, he has a quote in there relative to the same subject, which I will allow you to read in its totality. I will just utter these words. From the letter, Medicare has a very well thought out approach to clinical trials. The attached comparative matrix demonstrates the ways in which Medicare ensures that requirements for a qualifying clinical trial are fully supported and appropriately described. Medicare also has a good description of routine costs of care. Based on this existing policy, we believe there is an opportunity to add some clarity and definition to Senate Bill 316, such as therapeutic intent of a trial and a list of desirable characteristics for a trial. Madam Chair, I will stop there, but let me add my encouragement to read the 2 letters I've submitted, as well as the matrix. Discussions on this issue of clinical trials go back, in my memory, to at least the special session of 2008 in February, and I believe there's a way, and I think the testimony this morning has illustrated that, to pass Senate Bill 316 as, in fact, a consensus product. My compliments to Brian Beringer from OHSU, as well as Senator Devlin, for their openness to talk with us along the way. And to the extent that I just heard the conversations you had with the gentleman from Regents, I need to reflect on those amendments they suggested, run them by the 2 doctors whose letters you have. And if there is a work group led by Dr. Bates, we'd be pleased to be there in the spirit of these letters to try to help produce what I believe is a consensus product. One of the things I always say when I come before you talk about mandates is that, I know you're sensitive to this as well, we just need to reflect on the potential for some increased cost associated with the mandate. If we can make it, in the spirit of the comments made this morning, revenue neutral, great. We're happy to participate in that process. So, Madam Chair, thank you, and I apologize again for the absence of the 2 doctors who would be better able than me to answer questions from my friend Dr. Bates. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Dr. Bates, were you able to get a time?
Tuesday evening, 5 o'clock, my office. Would that work? which is 205. We got new offices. I think it's 205. And right across the aisle from that, I think, is a large room we can sit in. So those of you who can attend would be great. So next Tuesday evening, 5 o'clock. It'll take 2 or 3 hours, I expect. So it'll be a long evening, and I'll try have some pizza or something there.
Yeah. Not Dewey.
And to make things really work, I'll have a bottle of wine there. At least I'll lose that.
You'll have a big attendance if you do that. Madam Chair, I'm going to presume that it would be acceptable to you and Dr. Bates that others in the room from a health insurance or other perspective who would like to participate without getting too big a group.
Bring who you think is appropriate. Let's not make it 30 people because we can't get anything done. So I'll let you work out who you want there, and I wouldn't want more than 11 or 12 people because you get bigger groups than that, you can't function. And Senator Cruz will be assisting me in that meeting. So 5 o'clock in my office, and I'll arrange for a bigger room for all of us from there.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Bates.
Thank you. Dave, that's very impressive with your computer. Mike Dewey, the ODS Companies, thank you for inviting me up here. I want to thank OHSU for working with the insurance companies. I do think we can reach a consensus product that at the end of the day, we know what we're getting. The language in the bill was a bit confusing. And I think we are, at least ODS was remiss in not working on this a little bit sooner. Unfortunately, we get into this. We know the session's going to come up and say, okay, we're going to have time to do it. I wish we would have thought about this. We've been thinking about it. We just haven't been thinking about language and so forth. So we'd like to be involved. We're not going to bring a lot of people to the table. We'll bring the experts. And I think we can get a product that will work because we need to have these trials move forward. There's no question because everybody will benefit. And, if it's done right, insurance companies, this is easy for us to say, but, you know, over time we want to find a way to control costs, and that's what we need to think about as we look at everything in this, is this building, how do we do that? And in part, down the road, that is could happen. But in the meantime, we don't want to have unintended consequences of having premiums go up because trials aren't as managed as well as they can. But we think we can get something done here. So I thank you.
Great. So Mr. Fiskin, you're going to have how many people?
At least one, maybe two.
Okay.
But probably. I'll have a doctor there.
Okay.
To compete with the appropriate individuals in the room in terms of intelligence and perspective.
And Mr. Dewey.
You're not going to make it, but try.
And Mr. Dewey?
Well, not more than two, for sure.
Okay.
And if Dr. Bates says one, it's one.
Okay. And then Mike Becker. How many?
We will have one.
One?
Two.
Two. And then OHSU?
We will have two.
Two.
You need a conference room.
So
I'll use the conference room.
Am I missing any group?
You have one up
there. I think that's 2, 4, 6, 7.
Next one.
And then Betsy Earls, will you come on up too? And how many?
It will be seven.
Okay. Okay. So there'd be one there. I'm just trying to get an idea for Dr. Bates.
I think each group.
And then Jeff Cruz and Bates.
Yeah.
And Betsy, are you going to have someone too there?
Yeah.
One.
One.
Okay. So we already got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
The insurers, are going to be really redundant. I mean, you're all going to be doing about the same thing. So I would like to have insurers get together and maybe select three or four. You don't have to have seven or eight different insurers there. Three or four should be able to bring the same points to us, I would guess. And I want to be sure that we have enough representation from oncology, OHSU, and maybe Willamette, so we have a balanced discussion. Would that be acceptable?
But who would, from Willamette?
I'm going to let the insurers, self-select seven. Okay, and hold yourselves down to that, and then let the oncology side select six more. Okay, and we'll call Senator Cruz and myself. Would that be acceptable?
Oh yes, I just want it to be a manageable group.
Thank you for trying to manage that for me.
Okay,
you guys, work that out.
All right.
Okay,
Betsy,
Madam Chair, and
Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries, and here to speak not in favor of or opposition to Senate Bill 316, but just to remind you that the business community in Oregon, as across the country, has been struggling in many ways, and especially to continue to provide any level of benefits to their employees that they are still able to provide. And to remind you that every additional mandate adds some incremental cost to the cost of commercial premiums. So AOI's board and policy committees this year have recommended that we suggest to the legislature caution and careful consideration of any mandate that we impose on the commercial carriers. And in that respect, we would urge the committee to consider the suggestions that have already been made for refining Senate Bill 316 and working through to make sure that it's the most efficacious way of handling this situation as possible.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Madam
Chair. Yes, Senator Morissette.
I may not be popular after I say this, but I think mandates actually save costs for insurance companies in dealing with the testing up front and taking care of the problem rather than having to pay the huge cost that occurs after the fact. So I respectfully disagree about mandates in general. Some mandates, I think, are necessary, and we will have bills on mandates this time.
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, I think that we understand that, and I think that the reason that we're not opposing this bill is because some mandates are useful in providing care and controlling costs. So, as I said earlier, we don't oppose this bill. We urge caution and careful consideration of the amendments that have been proposed.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Earls, is there any other people who wish to testify on this bill? We need to have a product, and I'm hoping that, thank you, Senator Bates, for taking this on, and we will hopefully have amendments that will at least be acceptable to both sides. All right. There's no further discussion. We're adjourned.
Well, I had to get that out.